We'll call the meeting of the Agriculture and Rural Development Committee meeting to order, February 9th, 2005, the hour of 2:30 p.m. having arrived. We are not quite at a quorum yet, and our first bill up, we are at a quorum. We will officially call the meeting of the Ag and Rural Development Committee to order. We have House File 426, a Pettus bill before us, and then House File 540, a Junkie bill. We will go out of order here with House File 540, since the author of the first bill has not quite arrived here yet. Representative Heigerken moves the minutes of February 8th. Any additions or corrections?
Not seeing any.
Hearing none, not seeing any. All fair say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevailed. Thank you. Oh, let the record note that Representative Heidgerken is making a difference. Okay.
He is an impact player, you know.
Thank you. Okay, with that, Representative Junkie, welcome to your Ag Committee. If you would like to present your bill, but before we start, I would ask the question, is there anyone on House File 540 that wishes to testify against the bill? Okay, Representative Junkie, you know what that means in this committee. It means that we're on the Reader's Digest version, and tell us what your bill does. And Representative Junkie moves that House File 540 be recommended to pass and sent to...
Mr. Chair, it really needs... It's up to you, but we can either send it to the floor or we can hold it over for possible inclusion in the Ag Omnibus Bill. I guess I didn't talk to you about that. I guess I'd prefer it be in the Omnibus Finance Bill's fine.
Okay, apparently, yeah, Osmond would like to see it.
Yeah, well, then that'd be good. Send it down there. Yeah.
Okay, so the motion is Representative Junkie moves that House File 540 be recommended to pass and sent to the Committee of Ag and Environment and Natural Resources Finance. Okay, if you could please present your bill, Representative Junkie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. House File 540... I have the department here to help on the testimony and give you a little background on it. But quickly, I was on the Southeast Minnesota tour last year with the Agri-Growth Council and had a chance to meet and greet some of the folks from the Department of Ag. And we got to talking, and as we talk about, Mr. Chair, your word, I believe it's Greg Value Added Davids. Is that your middle name this year?
Or ethanol.
Or ethanol. Okay, either one.
Same thing.
We talked about how can we do more to promote our value-added products, and indeed, how can we do more to get those products perhaps to customers overseas from Minnesota. And the discussion started centering around rail containers. And Wilmer has the second busiest rail yard in the state, Mr. Chair. The reason I'm going to explain quickly why it says Wilmer on here and not anywhere in the state and why you shouldn't be nervous about that. We put Wilmer on there because of our facilities. Second busiest rail yard in the state of Minnesota next to Northtown. Every Burlington Northern Santa Fe train that comes into Minnesota from the southern part of the United States ends up coming into Wilmer, Minnesota, and then is switched either to the west to Dilworth or the east to the Twin Cities. So we see a lot of train traffic through town. We're also building a brand new airport in Wilmer. They'll be constructing the runway this summer. And we have a four-lane highway that's being completed from Wilmer up to the St. Cloud Highway 94 connection. So what we have is a multimodal shipping site that's developing in Wilmer very rapidly. Wilmer is also a central location in the state. In fact, one of the original locations for this building across the street, the Capitol building, is just south of Wilmer because of its central location. Also, this facility, in all likelihood, would not just be used by Minnesota residents, but also the Upper Midwest Shippers Association, which includes the Dakotas, Iowa, and Wisconsin, are looking for a place where they can ship value-added products. What are we talking about with the container shipping? I'm going to let Mr. Danstrom explain that, but the easiest example I can say is, suppose we're talking about organic soybeans. You're a farmer, you've grown organic soybeans for market in Japan. How do you get them there? Well, in this scenario, we'd have the container right at the farm. Farmer would load that container right off his combine with organic soybeans. It would be certified organic and sealed right there. Brought into a container shipping facility, perhaps in Wilmer or perhaps somewhere else in Minnesota. But from there, down the rail tracks it goes to the West Coast, onto a ship, over to Japan, truck to the end user once it gets off the boat in Japan. So that's a simple scenario of a complicated process, quite frankly. The other thing, I think, again, what this is going to focus on, too, and I want to emphasize that again, is agriculture products. We do can ship some containers out of the Twin Cities, but the focus isn't there for agriculture, and it's difficult for our producers, I think, to have that focus in there and to get in. So really what we're looking for is a first-of-a-kind, one-of-a-kind facility focused on value-added agriculture and the marketing thereof. So with that, Mr. Chair, I will stop and hand it over to the department. This is the gentleman I met on that tour who brought this all up, and he can explain who he is and what his business is with the department and why we're looking for this. This bill, again, I said I was going to finish up quickly. This bill asks for a one-year-long study. The department, along with Department of Transportation, if we do this amendment in a little bit, will look at this, report back to this committee a year from now, and say, is it feasible? What location? Is Wilmer the best location, or could it be multiple locations? Glenwood, Bud, I know you have a big rail yard there, or other areas. Would that make sense? If so, do we need some bonding money or something next year to get this going? So really it's just a simple study. They're going to do the homework, bring it back to us, and see where we're going next year on this facility. And I'll, Mr. Chair, turn it over to the witness.
Thank you, Representative Junkie. First of all, before we proceed, we're on House File 540. If you look at your packets here, it's the Wilmer Light Rail
Easy now.
Wilmer Rail Container Loadout Facility. Is the A1 amendment yours?
Mr. Chair, if you want to, I'd move the A1 amendment to get the bill in the shape I'd like it.
Representative Junkie moves HO 540 A1 amendment. Any discussion? Hearing none, all fair say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. We now have the bill as amended in the shape the author would like. If the witness could please identify himself and who he represents for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Representative Junkie, Chairman. My name is Craig Damstrom, and it is a pleasure to be here today. This is a project that I came to work for with the Minnesota Department of Ag approximately 3 years ago. And it's nice to be talking about things that are very important to me for agriculture. Just to give you a little bit of background on myself, I spent 20 years working in Latin America with Fortune 500 companies, ag chemical companies. I have a picture of my farm there near Alexandria, Minnesota. Lived there now for 15 years, farmed it with my family, corn, edible beans, potatoes. And when I bought this farm with the bank quite a few years ago, I saw all this irrigated ground, and I thought this has got to, I ought to be able to grow more on this than corn and soybeans. And I have, but I have also found that it's not necessarily easy to market these other products that you can grow on an operation like this. And so it was very important to me when the Department of Ag asked if I would help producer groups find market, direct markets for their products wherever they might be in the world. So I do work now, as have worked for the past 4 years, as a trade consultant for the Minnesota Department of Ag. And I'm very pleased and proud to have been part of the formation of what was initially the Minnesota Shippers Association, which has been expanded to the Midwest Shippers Association, as Representative Junkie mentioned, because of the importance of Minnesota for a lot of our agriculture products flow through Minnesota to get to other places in the world. Some of my comments is that it was already summarized. I did meet with Senator Dean Johnson, Representative Al Junkie, and the Candy High County and City of Wilmer's Economic Development staff in Wilmer to discuss the feasibility and desirability of constructing a rail container loadout facility in or near the city of Wilmer. MDA has not been directly involved in the Wilmer project, However, we recognize the importance for Minnesota producers to have access to low-cost container loading and transportation to the final destination through the state. This is important because demand for identity preservation, IP, is increasing from our world customers. The need for IP is driven by food security issues, and our customers need to maintain the quality of products that our producers can supply. We also recognize there's a growing opportunity to ship our IP products as backhauls on containers going back to Asia empty if they can be utilized efficiently. Just a little bit of background there. About two-thirds of the containers going back to Asia today are going back empty. And one of the reasons that's happening is because we do not have an efficient way of getting those containers to the sites where they can be loaded and then get them back on the way. Obviously, the backhaul does not pay as much as coming from Asia this way, so it's a real opportunity for us. I'd like to take this opportunity to congratulate the Canandaigua Ohio County and City of Willmar Economic Development Commission for, in fact, recognizing the potential that container transport offers to Willmar's producers due to the high quality and diversity of agricultural products that are available in the Willmar area. The Minnesota Department of Ag believes that for our producers to be successful in today's world market, we also need to become better marketers beyond our traditional borders. Once we have met the needs of the customer, the final step is to success is good logistics to make sure the product arrives on time at a cost that is competitive with the industry. As MDA's trade consultant, I look forward to supporting Willmar as they pursue new marketing opportunities. Today, I will try to answer some of the questions that you probably all have related to this project. The first question, of course, is why should the Burlington Northern Santa Fe want to put a loadout facility in Willmar? This is my thoughts. This is nothing that I've received from them directly. But what I can tell you from what I've seen is that past trends by the Burlington Northern Santa Fe and other railroads have been to consolidate their existing container yards, and they now have approximately 43 sites in the USA. I have a picture here of where these sites are located. They have approximately 43 sites in the USA. Two of these sites, of course, are located in Minnesota at St. Paul and Dilworth. In a conversation with Steve Rehnquist, Executive Director for the Willmar Economic Development Commission, that he had with the Burlington Northern Santa Fe, he was told that the St. Paul site is over capacity and landlocked. He was also told that the Burlington Northern is considering a new facility in Anoka. Railroads in general continue to look for efficiencies in their container business, and they are more efficient if they can concentrate their services from one major hub. This strategy, however, increases drayage costs for the farmer and the community not located close to the hub or a major railroad. And that's back one of the major issues that we see as we develop the IP added value market here in Minnesota is, in some cases, and I think the Shippers Association has done a good job at this, we can have a good price at the railhead, but we have all the drayage and costs to get it in there. And when we're competing with other areas of the U.S. and Canada, customers want good products, but they want competitive prices as well. And we run into some difficulty because of that. So then the next question is, in fact, how does the railroad system fit into this proposal? Of course, it would be nice if we knew what plan there is for container transport would be best to fit the major railroads, the short line railroads, the river, Duluth, and the water carriers. Water carriers, of course, is a jargon. It's the one who owns the containers. Studies are already underway in Minnesota for river and lake utilization by the Minnesota Department of Transportation. Another innovative option that is being considered is containers that have the flexibility for road and rail transport without expensive lifts. An example of this is the rail runner concept. And just quickly, I think this illustrates what we're talking about here. Basically, what the railroad concept allows you to do with these bogey wheels that you see sitting there on the track is you can back up to them with flatbeds that have containers on them. You can dolly down your chassis and then back up with another one and another one. And when you get everything all hooked up, you hook up your air, and the chassis drops down on these bogies on the rail, and away you go. This concept allows you to, in fact, do what is no longer is a concept, but in fact is a reality. This particular run is, as you can see, it's all chassis. These are units that are designed to carry from 50 to 100 of these in a distance of approximately up to $1,200. The benefit, of course, is that you can cross from one rail to another. You can cross from one short line to another. It gives you a lot of flexibility to use what Minnesota has, is we have a lot of railroads, we have a lot of short line railroads, and we have a big state that we need to find effective, efficient ways to get our product to whatever that location is that is the best to ship out of. And in this case, we're talking about Wilmer. It not only allows us how to get these products out of here, but it allows us to bring in empty containers. What we've found within the Shippers Association is that you can have good prices for containers, but if you can't acquire those empty containers that are out there, then they don't do you any good. This is an example of the rail runner that's presently running between Jacksonville, Florida, and Fort Wayne. Those are the schedules they had. They had a little problem getting started because about the time they got going, they had the big hurricane, and it really created some problems to them. My understanding is that Rail Runner is presently talking to the city of Minot to run this same concept from Minot in here to Minneapolis, St. Paul. I think they're talking about the Burlington Northern as well. And to me, the concept has a lot of potential for it. Rail Runner is not the only company that provides this kind of service, but it does give that flexibility to go where the railroad really can't afford to go themselves, but if you can get dedicated locomotives to shuttle these containers back and forth, then you can take them to that point that's the most efficient to load out of, to take it to the West Coast, the East Coast, or in fact here where we see to the Gulf to get to those markets. Finally, what is the potential for IP growth in the Wilmer area? And how would small and medium-sized farmers benefit from this growth? Potential growth for the IP industry is dependent on how competitive containers can be long-term as related to bulk shipments, the requirements of worldwide customers for specific traits, varieties, their concern for food and feed security, and finally, the overall growth of the container industry. Finally, small and medium-sized customers can benefit from this growth by tailoring their product to what the customer wants, ensuring the integrity of the product via sealed containers all the way to the final customer. The following picture will illustrate what last year's container growth was compared to the last 3 years. What we see there is a blue line going through there, which is the three-year average of container transportation. And then the green is last year's usage of containers. And what it shows is that containers are really taking off. And, of course, last year we had an unusual usage of containers because we reached the point where containers were as cheap to use going to Asia as it was to load shuttles from here to the West Coast and put them on Panamaxes. That's really extreme. But in fact, when you think about what's happening in the container industry today, that's where the building is going. That's where the 7,500 to 1,500 container, 20-foot TEUs are going. It gives them a lot of ability to ship a lot of products to a lot of different customers each direction, so there are efficiencies. And I think that that's something that that really needs to be looked at very closely as you design that transportation system for the future. How big is the container issue going to really get here in the upper Midwest if in fact they can be that competitive? So finally, the final question was, what would be the cost of conducting a study of the feasibility and desirability of constructing a rail container loadout facility in or near Wilmer? MDA does not have anyone on their staff that would be qualified to do this study, and therefore is reluctant to estimate the cost for this type of a study. So I'll have to pass on that question, but obviously that is, I'm sure that will be a concern here of the group. If there's any questions, I'd be happy to try and answer.
Okay, to open it up for questions from committee members to Mr. Damstrom. Seeing none, Representative Junkie renews his motion that House File 540, as amended, be recommended, passed, and sent to the Committee on Agriculture, Environment, Natural Resources, Finance. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Junkie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Okay, item next, House File 426, Appendix Bill, Farmer Lender Mediation Program expiration date extended and codified. So if Representative Pennis could join us at the front table. Are there any amendments for... Okay. And before we get started here, I'd like to welcome some of our good friends from the Red River Valley, the Lake Agassiz Emerging Leaders Program. Off to my right, some of your left, we welcome you to the Ag Committee today. Thanks for being here. Okay, with that, Representative Pennis, welcome to your committee. And if you could please, do you have any amendments?
No, Mr. Chair, I do not.
Okay.
And I would like to move this bill, pass it, and send it to the floor.
Send it right to the floor. Okay. Before we get started, we have a list of testifiers, Mary Nell, David Muller, and Mr. Doug Peterson. Is there anyone who wishes to testify in opposition to the bill? Okay, Mr. Appitz, he's the only one that wishes to testify against your bill.
And that would be fine, Mr. Chair. He will be nice.
Okay. Okay, with that, what we'll do here as far as an order goes is we'll let you present your bill, and normally we do the opposition first, but we'll hear the folks that are supporting the bill. Then we'll go to the people that have concerns about the bill, and then we'll vote on the bill. So with that... Representative Pennis has moved House File 426.
Okay, House File 426 is really extending the sunset date for the Farmer Lender Mediation Program, which is run through the extension of the University of Minnesota. It started back in 1986, when at that time throughout Minnesota land values began to drop and the expenses were still high, and we literally found farmers in very bad states, very bad conditions, and literally on the street. And so this program was to help them work through suddenly having not the credit to honor the debt that they had. It has been in place since 1986, and what has happened is that it has, every 2 years up until 4 years ago, it has been extended for 2 years and sunsetted, 2 years and sunsetted, and so on. Now, there are those that think that this program probably should just sunset. You know, this is one of those things, if it's not used, then you shouldn't be paying for it. And there is a fact sheet that is included in your materials that... have you found it? I'm going to show you what it looks like. A fact sheet, the Farm Lender Mediation Act, and it's got several bullet points on there. And the last one is the total number of cases was 1,720. The average cost per case was $274. I don't know how much you can get for $274, but that's pretty reasonable. And you'll hear some of this in the testimony. With that, I'd like to turn it over to my first witness, or do you want the other side first?
Why don't you present your case first?
All right.
We'll go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a second.
Chairman Davis, and distinguished representatives of the committee. I'm Mary Nell Chrysler. I'm director of the Farmer Lender Mediation Program that is administered by the University of Minnesota Extension Service. I have been a mediator with the program since 1986 and have facilitated over 5,000 sessions of mediation. The Farmer Lender Mediation Act instituted mediation of delinquent agricultural debts. The Act provides for mediation between creditors and farm debtors of credit issues, repayment of delinquent loans, alternatives to farm foreclosure, and other collection remedies. This state mandate affects the public policy, social, legal, and economic dimensions of conflict in agriculture, as well as rural family and community issues. The Farmer Lender Mediation Program assists agricultural producers, creditors, and various USDA agencies to address loan problems, USDA adverse decisions, and other disputes. This is done in a confidential and non-adversarial setting outside of the traditional legal process of foreclosure, bankruptcy, appeals, and litigation. Mediation is the use of a neutral facilitator, a mediator, to assist in the negotiations of the parties in the dispute. At this time, the Farmer Lender Mediation Program provides a panel of 13 mediators and 5 financial analysts located across the state to facilitate discussions between farmers and lenders. The program has a central state office located in northwestern Minnesota that creditors contact when they serve out a notice of mediation to a farmer. If the farmer accepts the offer of mediation, then a session is set up within the county in which the farmer resides. I call your attention to this handout. And last year there were 1,270 mediated cases, an estimated 11,430 program participants, and nearly $230 million worth of debt addressed in the mediation cases. The benefits of mediation are that it provides a confidential forum to discuss complex issues. Mediators are neutral. They help parties find solutions. Mediation builds strong working relationships with producers, their lenders, and the government agencies that they work with. The goals of farmer-lender mediation are to achieve open communication between the parties in order to resolve differences, create a non-hostile environment, define the rights and responsibilities of the debtors and creditors, and treat all parties with dignity and respect. Settlement agreements generally involve a mix of the following terms: full or partial payment of the debt, forgiveness or deferral of the amount of the interest or principal, or altercation of the payment schedules. Minnesota is the leader nationally for 32 states. We have the largest mediation program. Many other states are designing their program after this program. This program receives matching federal funding underneath the United States Department of Agriculture. In order to collect that 70% matching funds, there must be a Minnesota state program. Issues brought to mediation are economic, social, legal, and technical. The Farmer Lender Mediation Program under the University of Minnesota Extension Service is working well and is an excellent example of an outstate program that is teaching a healthy way to resolve conflict. This program does make a difference in people's lives. I respectfully ask that you extend this sunset. Do you wish questions now, or would you want to reserve those?
If any members have questions, we go now. Representative Moe.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick question. Looking at the fact sheet, you said 375 cases were settled, and 70% of the cost of this was paid by the federal government. Can I assume that this is somewhere around 375 cases of where people's family farm were spared foreclosure or something like that because of this program?
We can say that they completed mediation. Whether or not their farm was spared, there may have had to have been an orderly liquidation. but it was done without a bankruptcy and at least planning, so that you had tax planning along with it. Mm-hmm. Majority of time, we have the family staying on the farm. But that is not the goal. The goal here is to deliver a neutral program.
Mr. Chairman, quick. So this is just a statement. This seems to me an extremely cost-efficient way to support family farms in Minnesota.
Yes.
And I will find it difficult for anybody to argue against it here in this committee. Thanks.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I haven't yet found anything in state government for $249, except, you know, maybe a can of pop in the basement. But
some hammers went for that.
Yeah, some hammers went for that.
Okay, any other questions of the witness? Okay, thank you very much. We'll now go to Mr. David Moeller, Staff Attorney, Farmers Legal Action Group. Welcome to the committee, sir. If you could please state your name, who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is David Moeller. I'm a staff attorney at Farmers Legal Action Group based here in St. Paul, Minnesota.
Welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you, sir. I'd first like to thank Representative Pennis for carrying this legislation and for the entire House Ag Committee for being co-authors on the legislation. We support an extension of the program for an additional 4 years as well. And I just want to make a few quick points in addition to what Ms. Pleiser said. First, the extension service or extension is doing a great job in operating this program and running this program. The feedback we get from farmers that call us, from Minnesota Farm Advocates, and from attorneys that ask us questions about the program, it's all very good feedback about how the program's being run. And it's a good process. I mean, it encourages settlement, it encourages a cooling off period when farmers are in their most financial distress period. And it benefits rural communities and hopefully avoids bankruptcy and liquidation for farmers. And the other point I'd like to make is that it puts farmers in contact with people that can help them, that have technical skills, whether that be a Minnesota Farm Advocate, a financial analyst, a farm business manager, or a legal services attorney. I think the program is set up to put people in contact with others that can help them, or with farmers that can help them. And finally, I believe Mr. Appetz, if he'll testify the same way as he did on the Senate Ag Committee on Monday, will say that this program may violate the Minnesota Constitution. And I think he's wrong. There's a 1986 Minnesota Court of Appeals case that said that the program does not violate the Minnesota Constitution or the Contracts Clause of the Constitution. Mr.
Mahler, we'll let Mr. Appetz testify.
Okay. And I'd be happy to respond to whatever he says.
Shortly, he'll be coming before the committee with Representative Pennis's bill, where every member of the committee signed on to it.
With that, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to say thank you for.
And sometimes you just cut and run.
That's what Senator Vickman told me on Monday too.
Okay. But we certainly enjoyed your testimony.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, next witness, a good friend of ours, President of the Minnesota Farmers Union, Mr. Doug Peterson, to go on the record supporting the bill. Welcome to the committee, sir.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. It's good to be probably on this side. I see a lot of familiar faces and some I will get to know.
Ed.
Or you. Not that I was laughing.
Representative Werger.
And thank you. So some of this precedes my reputation for those who didn't serve with me. Oh, it's good to be back, yes. I've got a few prepared comments, but I think what's been said about this is has been good, the comments. I want to thank Representative Pennis for bringing it forward. Minnesota Farmers Union is in direct support of the bill, in favor of the bill that it is to sunset. I'm going to just go away from my comments because you've heard about a number of the cases and a number of farms, and I want to bring a more personal note to this. I farmed during the 80s, okay? I left teaching and started farming in 1980 and made it through the 80s. I can tell you I also auctioneered through the 80s. I'm still a licensed and bonded auctioneer. And when Mrs. Pressler was talking about the tax estate planning and the tax planning before you actually make decisions if you're going to exit farming or stay in, very important. And what this bill does, it brings resources and skills that farmers and families don't have. when they're under financial pressure, when you don't know where to turn or what to think. I also farmed through 1988 where we didn't have 5 bushels of acre. That was considered all 3 crops that it was growing. So having gone through droughts, having gone through bumper crops, having made it through the 80s as an auctioneer and given farmers advice about how to exit or enter farming, this is a good deal. And as a legislator, ladies and gentlemen, in the 12 years that I sat here in where you're sitting, I never once received a complaint about the farmer-lender mediation. That concludes my comments.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson. Any questions for the witness? Okay, thank you very much, thank Mr. you. Peterson. And with that, we will now go to Mr. John Apitz, if he still wants to come down. You're certainly, as always, welcome before the Ag Committee, Mr. Apitz. If you could please state your name and who you're representing for the record, please, sir.
Mr. Chairman, something I'm John Apitz. I'm actually Ebenezer Scrooge of the firm of Scrooge and Marley. You've heard something about us in the past?
Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Of course, you don't happen on that one. He kind of turned the corner after a while.
He did. He did. Who knows, by the end of this show, I might turn a corner, too. Could I have the clerk just hand these out when she gets a chance? My name is John Apitz. I am with the law firm of Messerly & Kramer, and I represent Farm Credit Services. Here today, and I do have the sort of unpleasant task, as has been put forward, and I will try, Representative Moe, as best I can, the unpleasant task of challenging this bill, and understand that I'm not challenging the good that this program has done. Nobody can dispute in any fashion the good that this program has done over the many years that it's been here. And it has been here many years. I think the only one sitting around this table right now that was here when this bill was enacted is the council, Sam Rankin, next to you, and myself, Mr. Chairman. What I asked to have passed around was a copy of the state constitution, and I want you to take a look, quick look at something there. I'll read it to you very quickly. The state constitution, Article 1, Section 12, or Section 11, excuse me, talks about attainders. Constitution of the State of Minnesota, it says at the top. It talks about attainders, ex post facto laws, laws impairing contract prohibited. And what it says very quickly is no law of attainder, ex post facto law, or any law impairing the obligation of contract shall be passed. And it goes on from there.
Mr. Apples, what section was that again?
It's Section 11. I'm sorry, it isn't
highlighted. Oh, I love the Section 9.
Pick it. Section 11.
Treason defined. Okay, please proceed. How is it Section 9?
I see. Okay. You have to go down from that just so that
okay.
You care.
It's my bifocals.
Right? I think it's... Whatever.
Okay, so what point were you trying to make?
The point about impairment of the obligation of contract, Mr. Chairman, if
okay.
I might. And basically what it says is y'all can't go around impairing contracts that are established between various parties. You just can't do that. It's a violation of the state constitution. It's called unconstitutional acts. Except in certain situations. Let me talk about those situations very quickly. Situations such as natural disaster, war, and civil unrest, dramatic situations that happened. Now, there have been times like that in the state of Minnesota. A few here, as I mentioned, Mr. Rankin will remember a time back in about 1985-86 when there were farmers being forced off their land in the state by the thousands, literally by the thousands, tens of thousands in some cases. There were tens of thousands of farmers on the very steps of this Capitol. They filled these weren't the hearing rooms, but they filled the hearing rooms, they filled the Capitol, they filled the rotunda. I had a conversation with a then representative today, assistant majority leader in the Senate, Ann Rest, who recalled to me that the members of the House of Representatives fasted for a week and slept in the second floor of the rotunda of the Capitol. And essentially a sympathy effort on behalf of the people who were there literally suffering in this great state. And they didn't stop there. They got on their tractors and they got in their trucks and they headed to the United States Capitol. And they went by the thousands and they marched on the United States Capitol. The legislature in 1986 took some rather drastic action. They risked abridging the Constitution They risked impairing contracts between lenders and borrowers in that particular situation because it was of that sort of nature. We had a national and a state crisis that faced this state at that particular time. And what they did was pass something called the Farmer Lender Mediation Act. And on the other side of that page that you just got, there's something called Mortgage and Contract for Deed Moratoriums. There is the legislative findings, and the legislature, your predecessor, said at that time in section 583.21 that the legislature finds that the agricultural sector of the state's economy is under severe financial stress due to low farm commodity prices, continuing high interest rates, and reduced net farm income. The suffering agricultural economy adversely affects economic conditions for all businesses in rural communities as well. Thousands of the state's farmers are unable to meet current payments of interest and principal payable on mortgages and other loan and land contracts and are threatened with the loss of their land, their farmland, equipment, crops, livestock, mortgage and lien foreclosure, cancellation of contracts for deed, and other collection actions. The agricultural economic emergency requires an orderly process with state assistance to adjust agricultural indebtedness, to prevent civil unrest, and to preserve the general welfare and fiscal integrity of this state. Mr. Chairman, members, nobody sitting here, nobody in this legislature, nobody in this state, be they Margin or Scrooge and Marley or bankers or farmers or anybody, wishes to relive that particular era. Nobody. But today is not that era. Today is not that time. And the conditions in this state have changed dramatically. As a matter of fact, we fight today over such things as restraining the growth in certain sectors of the agricultural economy. How to enhance others, how to help the ethanol industry, how to build facilities, wonderful facilities in Wilmer, Minnesota to haul the commodities that we have in this state. We don't argue over how to quell civil unrest or how to protect lives and property when it comes to this particular issue. The reason this law was designed to sunset 18 years ago was it was a temporary suspension of the constitutional guarantees that are in the state constitution. The sunset was, that sunset has been extended 12 times in the last 18 years. It's laid out here, I think, in the summary that you've got that Sam provided, that Mr. Rankin provided for you. It was never intended to be made permanent, and it hasn't been made permanent. And perhaps conditions have not improved all that much, or maybe it's just too hard to let a good little program go. But indeed, the Constitution would provide that you should. If the conditions no longer exist, and that's the three-part test, one of the three parts of the test that Mr. Moeller was talking about, if the conditions no longer exist, there aren't thousands of farmers losing their land, if we're not talking about civil unrest, if there's not a resulting threat to the physical integrity of the state, then neither do the reasons for the continuation of this particular provision, impairing the obligations of contract. I could labor on with this. I won't, Mr. Chairman, other than to say the times have changed, the lender-borrower relationships have changed, the economy in rural Minnesota has changed, and it may be time for the Farmer Lender Mediation Program to simply sunset, as it was designed to do 18 years ago. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any questions for the witness? John P. Moll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Appet. Does not AgriBank or Farm Credit Services require mediation now?
Mr. Appet?
Yes, sir. Mr. Chairman, Representative Junkie, we do, in fact, have a mediation program, a debt restructuring program that is not just like the mediation program, a debt restructuring program that is imposed by the federal government through the Farm Services Administration. It is kind of odd that I would be sitting here and some of my banking counterparts might not, but I raised my hand and got to be the chosen one. We would still be required to go through restructuring with our borrowers prior to foreclosure if such an action were to be brought. And of the 1,200 mediation notices that are issued, I believe Farm Credit has delivered about 235. I was just looking at Ms. Bressler's figures earlier. I think implement dealers do about 490. There's various different parties that initiate these.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one comment before I give up my the mic here. I do thank Representative Pennis too. I think it's a good program. In the 80s, I worked for a wholesale supplier of agriculture products, and I can tell you, Mr. Chair and committee members, without farmer lender mediation, many times a supplier would probably be left out of the room too. In all deference to my good friends, the bankers, they always have first position, and rightly so if they have real estate liens. But certainly putting fertilizer or seed or chemical onto the ground and now trying to recover from someone who's in financial stress was difficult too, but at least we were in the room. And in many, many cases, we did get some recovery of funds. So for the supplier end of it too, I think it's very important, and I suspect if we had suppliers in the room to testify, they'd be for this also.
So, Mr. Rankin, let me, before I go to Representative Ball, if this did sunset and it's not in place any longer, the way it sounds, farm credit through a federal law would continue to have some type of restructuring or mediation. What would, like, a state bank be required to do?
Mr. Chairman, committee members, I believe that a state bank, if it were not using any of the federal type money, would no longer be directly required to go through the Farmer Lender Mediation Program.
Okay, Representative Ball.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You talked about this bill came about because of an emergency situation, or you used the term crisis or something like that, that warranted the suspending of the Constitution. A couple questions then. If a family farm is closed, you know, they have to sell off their assets and move off the land. Say one farm, is that a pretty significant? Would you say that's a significant problem? That's a bad thing, right?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Moll, certainly for that family, and right, perhaps others.
So how about 10 families, Mr. Chairman? 10 families or 100 families?
10 times the problem, 100 times the problem.
So we're talking about 1,275 families. To me, that would justify an emergency or a critical situation, and I think warrant maintaining this good program.
Representative Pennis, this is going into statute rather than session law. In the past, it's gone into session law. Is there any particular reason for that? Or?
No, I don't have a particular reason for that. It has not been codified. Maybe Mr. Rankin could help us.
Mr. Rankin.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, the process every year, in a couple of cases, more often every 2 years, has been merely to amend the repealer, which was in the session law passed in 1986. Procedurally, that becomes very cumbersome the more times you do it. As you can see from the reviser's note on the statute side of the sheet of paper that Mr. Appitz handed out, the note gets very long and cumbersome, and in fact there are two notes this time. I would suggest for you what the difference between these two notes is, and in each case during the session of 2001, there were two separate bills that included an extension of these provisions. They were both passed in the first special session of 2001. One of them was in Chapter 1, and it extended the repealer to June 30th of 2005. But also, there was a section in first special session, Chapter 2, that extended the mediation program till July 1 of 2003. That's why there are two reviser notes in here. The earlier repealer became we have a note on it, but it didn't matter because the later repealer was the one that prevailed in this case. It would be better to get the date of fixing into statute so that everybody can see it and amend it if they want to. It would be much easier in the future to do that.
Okay. Good job, Representative Pennis.
I just like to say, you know, times they are changing, and from 1986 to now, I don't know how, do we have enough farmers to get that much, to get them into the crisis up here to the Capitol? I mean, would we get that many here? Do we have enough left? And daily, they're going out. I just wanted to say that. But nothing personal.
There was a question. Thank you for enlightening the committee. Okay, I do have a question. Mr. Appitz brings up, I'm kind of a constitutional guy, believe it or not. Probably not today, but normally I am. You bring up a very good point. It would beg the question, however, since this has been redone since 1986, however many times it's been done, any law impairing obligation of contracts, and if it's mandatory as it is, I can certainly see your argument, but it begs the question, why hasn't that been challenged?
Probably because it's worked fairly well, and nobody wanted to bring, excuse me, Mr. Chairman, probably because it's worked fairly well, and nobody wanted to bring forward the challenge. Nobody wanted to be Scrooge at the Scrooge and Marley Law Firm.
Okay. Any other questions? Griffin Mull, I'm sorry, were you done?
No, yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Mr. Chairman, could I one other thing to that? As I said in my opening remarks, I'm challenging the basis for the bill. I'm not challenging the program. The program has worked very good. Ms. Chrysler has done an excellent job. The folks over at Flag, David Moeller, and others have done a good job. The question that I'm posing, the question I'm putting here, is it comport with the Constitution? Is that part of, and what's your duty to uphold the Constitution going forward to continue to extend this? That's the question I raised.
If you, Mr. Appas, if you make it constitutional in your opinion, or, and I happen to agree that you're probably not too far off on this, how could you make it possibly voluntary, like we're doing, what was that one from Chuck and Charlie Stenholm, the former congressman from Texas, and they're talking about BSC was voluntarily mandatory.
Mr. Chairman, that strikes me as an oxymoron.
Okay.
However,
like
that said, there
like
was a good
water heater.
Pardon?
Hot water, why do you heat hot water? Whatever.
However, there have been in the past a good deal of discussion about voluntary programs. And indeed, there is a voluntary program, I think. I'd have to defer to Mr. Rankin, but I think there was a voluntary program or is one on the books. There are various sorts of arbitration procedures and a host of other situations. And understand, these are not the only obligations and contracts that are signed between, for instance, property owners and bankers, lenders. I think most everybody in, a lot of people in the state have mortgages on their houses, and we don't have mandatory mediation when it comes to houses. There are voluntary mediation programs, there's arbitration programs that are imposed by various courts. There are other means of accomplishing some of this.
Thank you. Any other questions? Hearing none, Representative Pennis, thank you, and Mr. Appitz. Representative Pennis moved that House File 426 be recommended passed and sent to the House floor. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The bill is passed to the House General Register. Next committee meeting, Tuesday. Any bills up? I just want to make a quick announcement. Next Tuesday we have the Erdahl, unless you said Erdahl, obesity language, bill that we'll be looking at. So that should be interesting. With that, good government all the time, we are adjourned.